Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight, we talk about addiction. There has been much in the news about drug and alcohol addiction, but we hear very little about another addiction, food addiction. My guest this evening has written a book called Starved to Obesity, in which she describes her journey out of food addiction and how we can all do it as well. Chubby in childhood, anorexic in her teens, and obese until age 47, Emily Bowler, the author of Starved to Obesity, was desperate to find freedom from her struggles with food. She never expected to become an inspirational voice for food addiction recovery to millions of people. In her book, Starved to Obesity, Emily Bowler discusses her personal journey and her hard-won freedom that may help us to break free from things that sabotage our health and well-being. It is a pleasure to welcome my guest this evening, Emily Bowler, author of Starved to Obesity, to help us take charge of our lives on WDIY. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you, Eleanor. It's a pleasure, my pleasure, to be here this evening with you.
What prompted you to write this book of your journey?
Actually, when I was a teenager, you know, if I could have only had a book like this for me to read, for my mother to read, for my dad to read, it would have saved me and my family then and my family now just years of pain and suffering. I suffered really needlessly. There was my, you know, with my eventual boyfriend, fiance, husband. We've been married now 38 years.
God bless you.
Thank you. We have raised five children. And, you know, we went through some really, really hard times in our marriage and as a family due to my addiction to food. And so, you know, if I could have had a book like this on a shelf for to read when I was 16 years old. So, and there wasn't a book like this, so that's why I wrote it. There's children out there. There's women, there's men who they just need this book to unlock some keys that will prevent a lot of suffering and get them out of the suffering.
How were you addicted as a child?
Oh, my goodness. I'm from the farms, the farmland of Indiana, the cornfields of Indiana. My mom was just a wonderful cook. We had pies and cakes and everything from homemade beef and noodles, the noodles from scratch. She was probably a world-renowned cook, except, you know, she just cooked for her family. And not only did she, you know, make all this homemade food, sugar seriously was a seasoning on our table. We had a garden. We ate plenty of vegetables. But we put sugar on everything. We put sugar on the tomatoes, sugar in the potato salad, sugar in the green beans. You know, everything had a little bit of sugar. My grandma, she would make cookies, sugar cookies, and she would say the best sugar cookies are where you close your eyes and add another cup of sugar.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the secret ingredient to a good sugar cookie. So I grew up with that, and you know, my taste buds were so addicted to sugar. Plus, you know, Halloween and Christmas and all, you know, Easter. Oh, my goodness, the chocolate rabbits and jelly beans. And I just had sugar all the time. And that's where it started, is way back when I was a little girl.
You know, as you're talking, it reminded me when I was growing up, my dad had a fruit and vegetable store. And right next to the fruit and vegetable store was a lovely bakery, and they had beautiful eclairs, chocolate eclairs, and they were 2 for 5 cents. And the first, and I used to go to my dad and say, Daddy, can I have a nickel? Daddy, can I have a nickel? And he said, honey, I'm busy with customers. Let me show you the register. And he showed me the register. He said, see that red button? That says no sale. You want a nickel? Push that button. Take a nickel. Be my guest. And that's what I learned. And that's how I learned to get my own chocolate eclairs. So I'm on board with you.
Yes. And it was, you know, it was any time I wanted the sugar, it was available. I mean, you know, as a child, of course you want sugar, you know. And not that it wasn't regulated. Maybe there was some regulation to it. I don't remember that part. But all I know, we had just everything was sweetened and homemade.
How did it affect your life growing up? Did it affect you socially growing up as a child in class or anything of that sort?
Oh, absolutely. I say there's not a whole lot of sympathy for an overweight child. And the brunt of the playground, not only are you last to be chosen for, you know, playground games, except for tug of war, you're first to be chosen for tug of war. But the name calling was relentless. I remember going home at night, and I would cry myself to sleep. You know, no pity there. It's just that's how much it affected my heart as a small, you know, as a child. And I remember even in sixth grade, I don't even know why I won, but I won some kind of a cheerleading. I got picked to be a cheerleader, which was the worst case scenario for a chubby little girl at that age, because I had on, you know, a really tight-fitting cheerleading outfit. My mom had to special make it, so it showed all of my rolls, and it was short, so it showed my chubby legs. And out on the gym floor, the opposing team, you know, they would just call me name after name after name. And you know, back then, bullying and name calling in the 60s, in the 70s, even though it wasn't a good thing, it didn't seem like people really understood the damage it could do. So it was allowed, you know. And so parents, everybody just stood by and let all these opposing teams, the fans from the opposing teams, you know, call me names. And that really scarred me a lot as a child.
And so if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life, and this is your host, Eleanor Barbro. And this evening, I'm interviewing Emily Bowler, wife, mother, inspirational speaker, and author of Starve to Obesity. And when did things change for you, Emily?
Well, actually, I knew in order to make it through to high school, I had to just starve myself. So I basically had an orange every day for lunch, and I was a normal weight for high school. But then I got too thin, and I became anorexic, and then it became food battles at home. But then after I gained enough weight just to go to college, I met my then husband, or my husband now, and I met him, and slowly the pounds started coming on with a vengeance, and then with each pregnancy, I gained a good 15, 20, 30 pounds extra. And by the time I was 47 years old, I had 100 pounds of extra weight on my body. So, I went from chubby in childhood to just losing too much weight in high school. And then it just, you know, I say it was like a rubber band wrapped up. It just boomeranged and just went the opposite direction.
Emily Bowler, what changed your life? Was there something that happened that changed your life that led you to a different kind of life?
Oh, absolutely. I actually, when I was 47, I had this was sort of like my crisis point in my life. I put my arm in one of those blood pressure cuffs at Walmart, and it read 157 over 94, my blood pressure. And I knew at that point, I'd already been diagnosed with heart disease. I'd already been diagnosed with prediabetes. And I knew with that high blood pressure, it was no longer a matter of if I was going to have a heart attack or stroke, but when. And so that was my, like, you know, epiphany moment at that time was, I've got to do something. And I had just been over to Italy, and I saw the Sistine Chapel, and I knew that I'm an artist, and I knew that, you know, smearing mud in my body with the incorrect foods. So anyhow, long story, I Googled, I found Dr. Furman, Joel Furman. He's written the book Eat to Live, Eat for Health, The End of Diabetes, and he's based out there in the East Coast, and I found his information, which is putting lots of high-nutrient foods into our bodies, greens and all kinds of broccoli and cauliflower and vegetables, all kinds of fruits and berries and nuts and seeds and whole grains and beans. I mean, just a lot of food. And I started nourishing my body. And once I started nourishing my body, the cravings started going away. And that was 11 years ago. I lost 100 pounds by just focusing on foods that provide my body with lots of nutrients.
And have you been able to, sustain that without going up and down?
I have, although 4 years into it, I lost 100 pounds in about 10, 11 months, and I had, you know, kept the weight off. And then 4 years into that journey, my 21-year-old son, he died by suicide. Oh. And eventually, after the shock wore off and everything, I lost my appetite for eating in general, which is really unusual. You know, that never had happened before in my life, but I just lost my appetite for anything to eat. And when I did start eating, I gravitated towards foods that weren't as high nutrient, and the pounds started coming back on again. I never gained all the weight back, but, you know, like today, I'm a good I'm still 10 pounds over, you know, what I weighed before he died. But, you know, I gained weight back, and yeah, I learned I just have to, you know, stay abstinent of the foods, which low nutrient foods that have sugar, that trigger those addictive cravings all over again. I have to just totally abstain from those. But the only way to long-term freedom is to abstain.
So you had a crucial moment in your life. I'm sorry for the loss of your son.
But you
learned that food was not the answer.
And, absolutely.
And we'll talk more about that when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. This evening we're talking with Emily Bowler, who is a wife, mother, inspirational speaker, and author of Starve to Obesity. And we were just talking about how we don't talk about addiction, and you became addicted to food. Tell us about that and how you overcame it.
Yes, when I was little, I, you know, just was addicted because I was exposed to a lot of sugar and a lot of processed food, and I overcame it basically. I gained 100 pounds eventually over my adult life, and I lost that 100 pounds basically by focusing on eating lots of high-nutrient foods, vegetables, fruit, beans, lots of a whole variety. Instead of my focus being on restricting calories, restricting ingredients, restricting food, it was what can I eat at every meal? And I had all this beautiful food to eat. And so by nourishing my body, the addiction gradually just subsided and went away, and lost the 100 pounds in about 10 and a half months. I had the 100 pounds off, and that was 11 years ago.
And tell us about how something that happened with your son affected you.
Yes. In 2012, on Memorial Day that year, my 21-year-old son, he was the middle child, he died by suicide. And I really didn't think I would go as deeply into depression as I did, but most mothers who lose a child really struggle with deep depression, I found out later. But I lost, at the beginning, I lost my appetite for eating, which is totally uncharacteristic for me. And I gravitated towards eating more like low-nutrient foods, bowls of oatmeal, peanut butter, popcorn, things that, you know, help me to gain the weight. I say help me. I started gaining weight back again. And the only way I got out of it is I had to really up my game with counseling. I went to a professional counselor. I reached out to the Compassionate Friends, a grief support group. I went to a grief counselor on top of a counselor. I got massage therapy and reached out for my church for prayer. I mean, just I increased the support 10 times more, and that's what eventually got me out of it. I mean, it's taken a good 5 to 6 years for the heart to heal, but I'm not saying I'm totally there. But it's going to be a lifetime journey to heal from the death of a child. But
did your husband accompany you to any of these? Was he as well?
He did at the beginning. And, you know, even before the funeral, we had enough sense, I guess is the word, to go to our counselor at that time, even before the funeral, just to get his guidance, how to guide our family through it. We had still 4 remaining children, and to get, you know, just a game plan for how to navigate our marriage, because divorce goes up after the death of a child. And so he gave us a game plan, and that really helped a lot. And it for my husband, he didn't grieve in the same way I did. And that's the main thing he taught us, you know, in a relationship, a husband and wife or couple or anything, no two people are going to grieve the same. And so to give each other the grace and the freedom to grieve in the way we needed to grieve was a big source of help for us.
That was a remarkable move on both your parts to recognize that each of you needed counseling, but perhaps in a different way. So that was a source of relief, and I think it saved your marriage as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's been 7 years, and we're empty nesters now. This is the first year we're empty nesters. And, you know, our marriage is so strong now. We enjoy being together, and we've come through this on the other side stronger as a couple. And I do say it's because we did reach out for help, and we got help, you know, knowing how big of a magnitude this was we were going through. But I say the worst emotion, especially after the death of that severe, any kind of loss of a job, anything, you know, depression brings on apathy. And I think apathy is the most dangerous emotion we can experience, because when we're apathetic, we don't care to live, we don't care, let alone eat healthy, you know, or be healthy. And so we're just surviving from day to day because we're apathetic. And I experienced a really deep level of that apathy for quite a few months, maybe almost a year, where I really struggled to even want to live, let alone be healthy. And so that contributed a lot to my poor eating choices during that time. Or they weren't really poor eating choices. They weren't as, you know, nutrient dense at the time.
Well, so you made the decision, you and your husband made the decision to seek counseling to help you with your grief. And that helped you to overcome, not necessarily to forget, but to at least deal with the loss of your son.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
The fact that your husband went with you, that made you stronger as a couple.
Absolutely.
And when did you begin to, after that event in your life, how did you begin to cope with food? And how did that become an important thing for you to discover?
Well, you know, I actually had the addiction for food, you know, gone. I mean, it really was. I craved vegetables And this is before he died. I craved vegetables and I craved fruit. And I loved eating food that had a lot of nutrients in it. But when he died, like I say, my appetite just went away. And then when I did start eating, I ate with a vengeance. I just wanted, you know, like oat bars and peanut butter and almond butter and popcorn. I just didn't want any vegetables. I didn't really want much fruit. You know, so I think the grieving and any kind of stress does that too. Sometimes we eat with our emotions, and when many times, you know, that triggers so many unwise eating decisions, our emotions take over. Our counselor has always told me, you know, the emotions will kill you. And they really do. I mean, if you let them get out of control. Because during those times when we're guided by our emotions, we do make incorrect eating decisions, you know, things that aren't healthy for our body.
And how did you make the changeover to healthy eating?
After my son died or?
After your son died, right.
After, as my heart healed, I know this sounds really a little, you know, hard to understand, but as my heart healed, I just wanted to live again. Uh-huh. And as I wanted to live again, the decisions just came naturally that I wanted to choose foods like vegetables and fruits again. And there's a big part of the heart healing. I think if we have a broken heart, that's when we gravitate. You know, we don't really care to live as badly, you know. And I think we got to be careful, and it doesn't have to be a death of a child, but to be in that place that we want to live again. And if we need counseling to get to that point, that we're excited to be alive every day, when we're excited to be alive and we enjoy being alive and we enjoy the things around us and the depression is lifted, you know, we gravitate. We naturally want to do the things that are good for our body. So I think we really got to be careful, especially if we've had a pattern of addiction in our life, that we don't get to those points of being so depressed. We go to counselors. We surround ourselves. You know, it gets worse. Depression gets worse in isolation. Addiction gets worse in isolation. And I think as people, we've got to have this mindset. It's okay to reach out to a community. It's okay to reach out to friends and say, I'm really struggling right now. I can't do this on my own. And as we have a community, that's where we heal. We heal in a community, whether it's a counselor, whether it's friends, whether it's a supportive family, that's where we heal. But we have to be able to reach out and say, I really am struggling right now and I need help.
And as a result of your healing, you were able to find a program to help you to lose 100 pounds. Is that right?
Yes.
And what was the program that you found was most helpful?
Dr. Joel Fuhrman, he has a book. It's just a little book. It's called Eat to Live. It's been out there, for probably about 15, 20 years now. But that is the book that has changed my life, literally. My blood pressure came down. My diabetes came down. My addiction to food went away. When I followed the eating plan he has in there, is basically greens, vegetables, nuts, seeds, fruits, all kinds of whole grains. All that combined, the synergy of all those nutrients is what shed the weight off of my body.
What about protein? I didn't hear you mention anything about protein.
Yes, well, actually in the greens, I don't know if you know this, but just even broccoli, it has two times the amount of protein in it than a regular piece of steak. And if you're eating beans and nuts and seeds, you get a lot of protein by eating those plant-based proteins. You know, we're ingrained to only eat animal-based proteins, but the plant-based proteins, there's even a lot more when those are eaten to have protein in your body. So,
and,
you know,
and
it's really a myth that we need to be eating animals all the time, getting our protein from animals.
So one myth is getting our protein from animals, and the other is, can you take one bite of something? That somebody offers you. You know, I've just made this apple pie, or I've just made this brownie and I've got a new recipe, or I've just made this. How about one bite? How about that?
Well, I tell you what, the science on food addiction, and I can vouch for it as a person living in it, but the science on food addiction, just one bite of an addictive food, substance, whatever, not just, you know, drink, whatever it is, opens up the addiction, and it gets the pathways in the brain, the dopamine going, and you just start craving whatever it is, that substance. So you cannot have one bite. I always tell people, I don't know what a brownie tastes like. I only know what a pan of brownies tastes like.
Oh.
And so that we, as, you know, we cannot open that. If we've been addicted to brownies, if we've been addicted to a certain food, sweets or whatever, we have to just totally abstain. And that's where it's tricky, because most people think, oh, it's my birthday, I can have a piece of cake, or, oh, it's, you know, Christmas or whatever holiday it is.
What they don't know is that when you're addicted and you give yourself permission to have a piece of cake, it's not when everybody is there. It's when people go home and they leave a 3/4 of the cake, or a half a cake, or a 1/4 of the cake. That's when the addicted person goes for whatever is left over.
Oh, absolutely. I remember my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. You know, one of those sheet cakes with the beautiful white frosting and the roses on it and everything. I did really good at their party. I was so proud of me. I didn't eat any of the cake. And, well, guess what? That cake was sitting on my kitchen counter, the leftover cake, the next morning. And, oh, I ate so much of that cake. I was so sick. You know, the frosting and, oh. But that's true. You know, we're closet eaters.
Right.
You know, out in public, oh, we're so self-controlled. We have one piece. But when we get home, watch out. You know, you are so right, Eleanor. That's when it happens. That's when the addiction just unravels.
Emily, you know? Tell us how people can get in touch with you. Do you have a web page? How may people get in touch with you?
Yes, I'm at emilyfoller.com. That's spelled E-M-I-L-Y, B as in boy, O-L-L-E-R.com.
Thank you for helping us to take charge of our lives by understanding that we too can find addiction from free food. In her new book, we'll show you the way. Thank you, Emily Bowler, for helping us take charge of our lives on WDIY. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.